I'm Steve McLeod, and this is Bootstrapped, the podcast for people running bootstrapped software companies or wanting to run one. I run two bootstrapped software products, Feature Upvote, which lets your customers vote on ideas to improve your product, and Sabre Feedback, which offers a feedback widget you can add to your website. Follow along as I learn from talking to other bootstrappers and experts, and just maybe you'll learn something too. Today, I'm joined by Alex Yumashev, founder of JitBit. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, good to be here.
I'm delighted to have Alex on the show today because he was a major influence on my own decision to start a B2B SaaS, software as a service. Alex, do you remember MicroConf Europe, Barcelona? I think it was 2015.
Yeah, of course. I spoke there, right?
That's right. That's right. Which is why I remember it. I was in the audience when you were the speaker, and there was something about that talk that day that just made things click together in my head. You told us in your presentation how well JitBit was doing. I remember this very well. It was just a team of four people, and you told us your revenue, in fact, your profit was quite an impressive number. I won't repeat it here.
Yeah.
But I did think to myself, only four people? This guy doesn't seem too different from me. If he can run a B2B SaaS and have this type of success, just maybe I can do it too.
We're actually down to three people right now.
You're down to three
at the moment. Yeah. And I'm thinking of actually keeping it that way.
How do you do that?
Well, we do have a bunch of contractors too. So we have copywriting people, copywriting agencies, actually several agencies that help up with content marketing. We have SEO people, they're all freelance. We have a freelance designer, but the core team, yeah, it's just the three of us.
And why do you choose to do that? Why do you choose to have all these contractors and not make them employees?
Well, I don't really know. I can't really say. I guess it's simpler this way, and our technology stack is pretty simple, so we can move pretty fast without having the enormous size of the team.
Oh, I like that. If we get a chance later on in this conversation, I'd like to talk about the technology stack because I think it's a very interesting topic. Yeah, so that presentation in MicroConf 2015 Barcelona was the day I started the search for what ultimately became Feature Upvote. Enough about me. Alex, tell us the short version of the JitBit story.
Okay, I started in 2005. So I'll try to compress the last 15 years into 5 minutes of talking. I had no co-founders. It was just me. And I started building native desktop apps for Windows. It was a side income. So I had a full-time job. And I was just, you know, testing this side projects, if I can make any money online. And then I created another project and another. I had a bunch of tools. Eventually, I got to this portfolio tools. And in about 18 months, I realized that I'm making almost as much money as I'm making from my day job. So that was something I should probably focus on, right? Because it took me like 6-7 years to build a career. And I had a pretty comfy, cushy job. I was like a CTO in a bank. Well, I had like the chief executive IT manager, and I was like the second biggest IT guy in the bank. So it was a nice job, but I was still making the same amount of money from my portfolio shareware tool, which was, I had like 6 or 7, and one tool was generating like $400, another was like $600. It was not that huge of a number, but still it was nice side income. And I thought, okay, I should probably grow this thing. I started learning SEO, I started learning marketing basics, and well, I guess at the moment, I thought that the only way to grow this thing would be release more and more and more products. So I tried the different product ideas. I launched, I think, about 25 different products, which is crazy. Some of them were web-based, but since SaaS didn't exist back then, it was just on-premise, you know, self-hosted web applications that people bought online and installed on their servers. And one of those tools was the help desk system that we have today as our flagship product, right? It was a case management system, and it's starting taking off gradually, very slowly, but it was generating like 20% of our income, then 25, 30, 45. And I guess it might look as I tried so many different product ideas that I actually accidentally bumped into goldmine, right? But it's not, because actually the market was already crowded back then. And one of the reasons is, I believe, I had tons of domain knowledge about this. I used to run an IT department, right, in a bank. So I knew what all the boring features that IT departments actually expect from B2B software, like all the unsexy, boring stuff like Windows integrated authentication or, I don't know, Active Directory synchronization. No one wants, the startup kids don't care about these things, right? Or they needed like an asset management module that will allow them to print QR codes on the stickers they could slap on laptops and printers. This is so boring. No one wants to build those features, right? So yeah, I had them in my software and people started buying it. And I made the decision to move to SaaS from the on-premise version. And currently, a long story short, it now generates, I don't know, 98% of our revenue. We actually removed all our old products from the homepage. We still have a bunch of those, but we converted most of them to freeware. And so, yeah, that's how we got here.
There's three things I want to ask out of this. First of all, can you define shareware? I think some of our listeners might be too young to even know what shareware means.
Well, it's native desktop apps for Mac or Windows that you can download for free. You can try them out for 14 days. And then at some point, it starts asking you to pay, starts nagging you for money.
Right. The old school model that is how a lot of us got started. The second thing is, do you think that the path people should follow is to become a CTO at a bank and then they'll be able to successfully launch their own B2B SaaS knowing?
Not necessarily. Yeah, of course not. But you have to get the domain knowledge, because I've seen most of the successful software products that I've seen are made by people who came from industries where they have tons of experience. So I know this guy, for instance, from the top of my head, I know this guy in Australia who makes software for construction companies. It's a simple CRUD application. It's a web-based app, but he had so much experience in the construction industry. He knows his customer. He literally says that, I know that my client is a dude sitting on a broken chair somewhere on the remote construction site in Australia. And he sits in front of a slow computer. He sits on a $2 million budget, but he cannot afford a fast computer. So yeah, he knows the industry. And, or like this other guy, you probably know him, Oliver Schopp. He's also from the MicroConf community. He makes this app that helps logistic companies take photos of parcels and boxes for quality control. You cannot come up with an idea like that if you don't have the industry knowledge, if you don't have the domain knowledge. So that's probably one of the most important things. So be there in the industry, spend some time there.
That's a really good point. I get really frustrated sometimes with the hoops, with the barriers that would-be customers put in the way of getting the sign up. But because I also worked in banking for a little while, I understand that they're not quite trying to be difficult, that this is what they have to do. I've been through the process of trying to get new software in the bank or new hardware, and I know nobody enjoys the process. And all you can do is be really helpful and understanding, and then you're already like ahead of your competitors.
Yeah, exactly. What people also don't understand these days is that 99% of businesses in the world, they have tons of problems that they usually solve. At the moment, they're solving those problems with some ugliest possible software, maybe probably even Excel or they just hire an intern to do the work. They're not interested in those fancy, trendy stuff like machine learning, AI, crypto, whatever. They have tons of problems, and you won't discover these problems if you have no industry knowledge.
Yeah, good point. You mentioned how you know what's important to your target listener, and it reminds me of how many people doing their very first time software product, their website tells us that their product is beautiful and based on this technology. And I'm thinking, nobody cares that it's beautiful, except for maybe other people who are not your target market. But the people who have the money, that's not what they're looking for. Or simple, they describe their products beautiful and simple. And no one's got a list of requirements saying, A, it must be beautiful, B, it must be simple. They've actually got real problems, such as we'll integrate with our authentication system.
Yeah, single sign-on, GDPR, HIPAA compliance, all this boring stuff that we have to deal with, selling to enterprise customers, which can be a huge pain, right?
Yes. A bit close to home at the moment. I probably can't speak about it, but yes. Yeah. Yeah. So now you said you're just three people. So what happened? Somebody left or?
We used to have a designer who used to be full-time, but now he's freelancing and he's part-time these days.
Okay, but he's still with you.
Yeah.
Okay. And these contractors you have, do they tend to be working like 10 hours a month or 20 hours a week or just as you need them on specific tasks?
I don't track how much time they spend, actually. So it's task-based. So I have a copywriter, for example. She actually runs a customer support department in another company. And she writes articles for me because she had tons of experience. I don't actually know how much time she spends writing those, but yeah.
Right. But the price is right and the quality is good.
Yeah.
So exactly. You mean all these good articles on your website that I thought were written by you are actually written by somebody else?
Some of them are written by me. Most of them are written by Audience Ops, which is a service by Brian Castle. He's also from the MicroConf community. He also spoke at the MicroConf.
The same MicroConf, Barcelona, yeah. 2015.
Yeah, this good talk about productizing your consulting services. And that's what he did with this service. It's really good. Actually, I'm really happy.
So one MicroConf speaker becomes the customer of another company.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the trick to get customers.
Yeah.
So revenue, is that something now that's stabled off, leveled off now that you're a mature company 15 years in, or is it still something that's nicely growing?
It is growing, but it's growing very slowly. You're probably aware of this term, like slow SaaS ramp of death, coined by Gail Goodman from Constant Contact. So growth, yeah, it can happen really slowly, but that's okay. That's how most SaaS companies go, right?
Yeah, it's frustrating in the first year or two in which you're just adding a few hundred dollars here and there to revenue. But yeah, if you just keep along that trajectory long enough.
Yeah, but still, it's still growing, but it's getting trickier these days because all the marketing channels, they tend to tap out at some point, stop working or getting ridiculously expensive or getting less effective. Because all the marketers, they just flock in onto some technique that where it starts abusing it.
Yeah.
As an example, like you remember like 7 or 8 years ago, everyone said, if you're sending out a cold email, make sure you have the send from iPhone or whatever at the bottom. So people think that it's actual like a personal email. No one does this these days because everyone started doing this and it stopped working. People developed this banner blindness and other kind of mental filters that, oh, by the way, I just received a cold email. It was genius just yesterday. I received a cold email from pipe.com. Have you heard about them?
It's pipe.com, no.
They're kind of trying to invent this new like a financial security based on SaaS annual subscriptions, right? So you can sell your subscription for a cheaper price. So you get the money up front and investors actually get the full amount at the end of the year. It's kind of interesting, but it's not what I want to talk about. I received this genius email from them. It looked like a forwarded message. So the subject line started with FWD, blah, blah, blah. And the message said, like, hey, Alex, my CEO wants me to talk to you. See below. That's his message down there. And the message down there said, like, hey, Alex, looks like he's a cool dude. You should get them on the call and, you know, get in touch with him and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I almost bought it. but it pushed all the right buttons, right? Like a little bit of flattery and it looked like natural, like a forwarded email. But yeah, I didn't buy it eventually because I'm Russian, right? I'm originally from Russia. And all Eastern Europeans are really like hard to...
On that topic, what do you think of the common wisdom I've heard that you can't sell to Russians?
Well, you actually can. We have tons of customers from Russia. They don't even know that... part of our team is originally from Russia. I grew up in Russia. And well, it's not. It's getting better, I think.
Yeah, my previous products, we were about maybe about 10% of all our customers were Russians. So I always found that interesting because I read over and over again, forget about marketing to Russia, but we translated our software into Russian. We had a website in Russian and you know, it worked for us. Yeah, I like these.
There's nothing special about that there.
Yeah. And now you're in Latvia.
Yeah, I'm based in Latvia. I spent a couple of years in the UK and then relocated to Latvia.
Okay. A good place to be as a bootstrapper?
Oh, yeah. I love it here. I love the nature. I love being close to a northern sea, which is, yeah.
The Baltic Sea. Yeah,
the Baltics.
Most people, when they're location independent, move towards the equator. It sounds like you've moved towards the North Pole.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it here. I like the northern nature when you have the pine trees and the forests. It's really nice.
It's a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. Hey, I want to ask you why in particular you chose to do a help desk. Well, you said it was case management at first. Did it sort of move towards being a general help desk over time?
Well, I mentioned, I knew a lot about customer service. I actually worked customer support, and I know how internal help desk software, what requirements enterprises have for it. It was, a transition from case management to help desk software. I actually wrote an in-house, while I worked at the bank, I wrote an in-house help desk software there. So I learned a lot about how it should work. And then I took all that knowledge to make a more polished product for myself. So yeah, that's the biggest reason is that I have tons of knowledge and I know how to organize support departments, support teams, and what they need to not be annoyed by another support ticket, right? But actually handle it efficiently.
Yeah. So it's a really crowded market. I was surprised to hear you say it was already crowded when you started. I kind of are under this impression that it's only in the last few years that all of our markets for B2B SaaS products have become crowded, but it was like that all along. And some of your...
There used to be a number of vendors like Kayako, it's ages old, or SysAid, Helpdesk, or a number of other competitors. It was always crowded. It's just that, well, first of all, of course, we made a better product. Uh-huh. And one of the reasons we kind of made it is probably because without even knowing it, I started doing this thing called engineering as marketing, or sometimes called side project marketing, because I had so many tools listed on all those software catalogs. I had tons of backlinks to my website. If the software didn't work, like I said, I converted it to freeware so I could still get some traffic and backlinks, et cetera, et cetera. So SEO was one kind of working through that from the start. Also, even in a crowded market, our product, we're lucky to be in a niche where our product kind of sits in between our customer and their customers, right? Our customer's customers. So we handle the communication between the two, right? And so we can insert like powered by links and our logos and brand mentions at the bottom.
Okay.
So it's like Calendly. You probably heard about Calendly, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. I learned about Calendly not because I went to Google and started searching for calendar negotiations, whatever, like software. I just received a link from someone. Someone sent me a Calendly link, and now I know that's my go-to place to go and schedule a meeting, right? So that's a lucky place to be. If you handle communication for your customers with your customers' customers, it can be really great. And I can see that because the majority of people who buy our software, they actually Google for our brand name. They Google for JITbit Helpdesk. They don't Google for generic software terms like Helpdesk software or whatever. And it's getting really hard these days. SEO games has changed a lot.
So I noticed on your pricing page that this powered by link or that you're talking about can only be turned off on your very highest tier.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess that feeds into the strategy of knowing that this is how you get customers. Yeah. Was that something you'd recommend in general?
So it's been working great for us. And we don't get that many customers directly who click the link, and I can see based on the funnel that they actually ended up buying the software, but it still works great for brand awareness. Like I said, people see this, maybe talking to customer service for a bunch of companies, they can see powered by JITbit, but what's that thing? And it kind of, stays in their brain. And I can see that looking at our traffic. So most people, they either click our AdWords, which we target just our brand name, which is crazy. You have to do that, right?
Yeah.
When someone searches for our brand name, I still have to pay, but it's okay. It's the world we live in, right?
Right. It's no point getting upset about it. Just deal with it.
Yeah. And Google's getting really great. But in the last couple of years, Google has been doing a great job detecting users' intent, right? Mm-hmm. So when the customer, which stage of the awareness funnel, this so-called awareness stages, I don't know if you heard about this. It's like...
Explain it briefly.
There's this classic marketing funnel that everyone's familiar with, which is X people visit your website, then X percentage of that sign up, and then some percentage end up buying it. But if you look at the same funnel from the customer's point of view, it's called an awareness funnel. It's the five stages that every customer goes through. First stage is the problem awareness, then solution awareness, then product awareness, then they get to consideration phase, and then they get to the actual conversion. Like the problem awareness that they realize, okay, we have a problem. In my case, in case of help desk software, they realize, okay, we are flooded by support tickets. We don't know what to do with it. And the next stage is solution awareness. They realize someone tells them when they found about this online, like there are software that helps solve this problem. The next stage is the product awareness. They start hearing actual brand names like Zendesk, HelpScout, or in case email marketing software, they realize there's MailChimp, Drip, I don't know, MailerLite or whatever, Infusion software. And the next stage is the consideration stage where they actually start comparing products like feature sets, pricing, technical requirements, et cetera, et cetera. And the last stage is obviously the conversion where they actually pick a product and they buy it. And Google understands if someone's Googling for a generic software term like email marketing software or project management software or help desk software, they're at the solution awareness stage. They don't need actual vendors in the search results. And if you Google for that, you will see that the top 10 results, they're going to be maybe one, maybe two actual software vendors. It's going to be the biggest ones, right? But the rest of the results will be like top 10 email marketing software of 2020 or best email marketing software below this or open source email marketing software or reviews and feature comparison, et cetera, et cetera, right? Because Google understands the search intent. No matter how many backlinks you buy to your website, how many content you put out there, Google understands that you're the vendor and the customer who does the search. They're not at the stage where they're ready to go to a vendor's website. That's what I mean by saying the SEO game has changed a lot. You have to target the bottom of the funnel, the bottom of this awareness stages.
And how do you do that?
Well, it's called bottom of the funnel content marketing. You start putting out content that actually, first of all, it helps your existing customers solve problems using your product. You're killing kind of both objectives here. So you're helping your existing customers and then you get the long tail search from Google. Then you publish comparison articles, comparing your product with your competitors. So it's okay to do that. Mm-hmm. Feature comparisons, yep. Pricing, and et cetera, et cetera. And also, speaking of the solution awareness stage, you have to make sure that when someone searches for a generic software category, like email marketing software, you have to make sure that your product is listed on all those top 10 pages that do the comparisons, right? You buy pay-per-click campaigns there because mostly the results will be Captera, Software Advice, websites that do the review aggregators and comparison articles. You have to contact them. Most of them have big pay-per-click campaigns, so you can be listed there. It's okay if you're not getting any paying customers, but Google sees that your brand name is mentioned on a page that talks about email marketing software. Okay. So this word, which is your brand name, is related to this topic in some way.
Wow, I'm learning a lot. Yeah, I really am. This sounds like really hard to track with analytics too. If it takes people time to go through this awareness funnel, then they're going to search, perhaps land on our site, but they're not ready to buy and they're not even ready to sign up. So we're going to see that as an ineffective visit. But actually, it sounds like it's a very important part of a visit, but the process is long and can't be tracked really.
It can't be tracked. The only thing you can track is your rankings in Google. There are services for that. If you go Google from some generic software term, you take the top 10 result and you open them up, all the 10 pages, and you run the text on those pages through a TF-IDF tool, which is term frequency inverse document frequency. You don't have to, we don't have to get in the formula, but it's an algorithm that extracts the most important keywords from the text, the most essential ones. You run all these top 10 results through any tool like that. And there are free tools that do the TF-IDF analysis. One of them is, I forgot the name. Well, anyway, you can Google for one. There's tons of them. You run all these results through a tool like that, and you will see that, for instance, you just Google for project management software. Along with the obvious results like Gantt charts or task management or, I don't know, time tracking, all the keywords that you expect to be there, you will see brand names there, like Basecamp or Trello, and what was that, Asana. This means that Google actually knows that these brand names are related to this topic, the product management software, which means that those websites like Basecamp, they don't even have to build any backlinks or put out any content mm-hmm. because Google already understands that the word Basecamp actually closely related to this topic, right? And the way to achieve that is make sure your brand is mentioned on pages that talk about this topic without even a backlink, right? So for you, for example, feature upvote should be, this word featured upvote should be mentioned even without a link on pages that talk about product management and feature prioritization or roadmap prioritization. I don't know. How do you call your, how do you name your category?
Feature request tracking.
Okay. Well, so yeah, figure out pages that talk about that. And
okay. So if you were running feature upvote by some miracle, you would try to get onto Capterra and G2 and all those yeah. sites. Okay, I have not done that. I've asked a couple of people in the past whether it was a good idea and hadn't received any strong answer one way or the other, but this seems like a very strong argument for getting on all those
even
sites.
If you're not, even if you won't be getting actual customers, paying customers or signups, you just have to make your bid so you're listed on the page one of the results. It could be like... It depends on the country where the people come from, but it's going to be less than a dollar. You don't want the top one space. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be listed there.
Oh, that's great. And what about using Quora in a similar way? Quora has lots of pages that compare a whole bunch of products or at least list a whole bunch of products, and it's free to be on Quora.
Yeah, it is, but Quora has been overused in that sense. There's a lot of... so many times I was actually searching for something on Quora and the only answer I get is this huge list of vendor affiliated people who were recommending their own products. So
yeah,
it's becoming that link farm. So yeah. I'm not sure.
Quora was helpful for me in the first months of feature upvote because it did put us more or less indirectly on the front page of Google. Somebody was searching for feature request tracking or alternative to user voice. One of the top results was always Quora, and then we were on the Quora page, but that has stopped working for us over time. So well, and with Sabre feedback, it hasn't worked at all.
You have to check if it stopped working. Try to look at that Quora answer that were driving you some traffic. Try to look at it anonymously without being logged in into Quora. Maybe your answer is just hidden.
Okay.
But it doesn't show you that if you're logged in, but if you open the incognito browser window, you will see that. It might be that.
Alex, this has been so interesting so far. I haven't even got close to getting into my list of topics I was actually intending to ask. So at this point, I'm going to jump to something else. I want to talk about your co-founder or experience. Now, if I understand, you started off just by yourself, but you now say you have a co-founder. How does that work? How do you go from founder to co-founder?
I just hired myself a co-founder, I guess. So technically, he's not a co-founder. He's a business partner. I just prefer calling him a co-founder because when you say business partner, people start picturing like a shareholder, financial investor type of thing. But he's actually a person right next to me with a laptop doing the same thing. Yeah, so at some point, I realized I'm just overwhelmed with everything and I can't do this alone anymore. So I hired someone who I worked with before and it turned out great. I offered him profit sharing as opposed to not equity, not bonuses or anything, because equity can be... Actually, Rob Walling has just covered this in Starters for the Rest of Us. He did a great episode on different ways where you can incentivize your team members. Bonuses, profit sharing, equity. Equity is actually the least preferred way to... Because it complicates taxes so much.
Yeah.
Because if you have...
For him,
mostly. Because if he has equity in my company, and my company, let's say, makes profits like $50,000, right? Even if he doesn't take the money out of the company, he still owes taxes. Even if the money stays on the company account and then reinvested back into the company in some... growth strategy. I don't know. He still owes taxes and he has to pay them and get the tax return later. Well, maybe there are countries where it doesn't work that way, but it still works in most European countries and in the States too.
Okay.
So yeah, it complicates things. Profit sharing is basically the same thing. He has X amount of profits, and we have a verbal agreement that if I ever decide to sell the company, he gets the same percentage of like a cut, right?
Okay.
But without having actual equity, because it complicates paperwork so terribly.
Okay, and he's quite comfortable with this arrangement.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you said like you were really getting overwhelmed. What was that experience like? Was it like, I can't get out of bed? This is so crippling? Or was it like, I just have too much to do?
I have too much to do, and it's getting like, I want to go and have some sleep. Yeah, it was like that. So I invited him. I told him like, dude, I need someone. Let's work together. I will give you the X percentage of the profits, but not less than the average developer. So it's kind of, make it safe for you. I will pay you not less than the average developer salary in where we lived at the time, which was like 2,000 euros. So it's not going to be less than 2,000 euros. And then like X percentage of the profit sharing.
Okay. And that means that now you are able to take time off.
Yeah, sure.
You completely trust him to run things while you're away for a week or two.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. I've seen in the past that you've, like, I think it was a MicroConf in America, you did a motorcycle trip on the back of it or something. So it's hard to run a company while driving a motorcycle across USA.
Well, I still have to stay online all the time, basically. But yeah, both him and our third person, which is Vlad, our Q&A engineer and system administrator, and he also handles all the customer success part of the business. He's great at this. Yeah, they're doing a great job.
I wish we had more time because I would love to know about the customer success angle and why you have somebody doing that. But that's all we have time for today. So maybe we'll have to talk again sometime.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
So thanks again, Alex, for coming on the show. Where can people find you on the internet?
At Jitbit on Twitter. And you can email me at alex@jitbit.com.
Okay. Anytime. We'll have that, of course, in the show notes. And I'll also put in the link to the Gail Goodman article you mentioned. And maybe I'll see if I can find something about the awareness funnel, because that was really interesting. Okay. Bye, Alex.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone. That concludes this episode of Bootstrapped. You can discuss this episode and other bootstrapping topics on our forums at discuss.bootstrapped.fm.